Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle with my friend and colleague, Alfonso Rachel, and this is the Virtue Signal made possible by the new members at BillWhittle.com. We were able to bring Zoe on as a result of that membership drive we had back in November, December, January, and we're very glad to be here, and the feedback's been tremendous. Zoe, we just recorded a show about an Air Force major, a black pilot who was flying F-22s and claimed there was institutionalized racism. We broke that one down a lot. But one of the things in the comments that I saw, and this one's kind of a third rail issue too, but I think people need to talk about these things. One of the things I saw in the comments was a number of black servicemen saying, yes, we've experienced that same kind of thing as you did, but a couple of them said something that I thought was really interesting and really damaging. A couple of these black servicemen in the comments section on YouTube said that the military was a hostile place to be because they expected you to act white. And this is the most destructive thing that I've seen in our society, this progressives have brought this idea that logic is a construct of white supremacy. And mathematics and the focus on the correct answer is a form of white nationalism. And all of this stuff. The hypocrisy of it is beyond my ability to describe. But there are people out there who want political power. And what they're basically saying is, you shouldn't have to be able to get a correct answer in math because getting the correct answer is acting white. And if this philosophy continues to take hold, and it is taking hold and has been taking hold for a while, what we're going to end up with is, we're going to end up with a society of people who know how to get the right answer to a problem and people who intentionally don't. And I think this is the most brutal injustice perpetuated on black people, minority people in the history of this country since racism ended. This idea that people of color shouldn't be held accountable to these crazy white standards of showing your work and getting the right answer, and logic is science. All these things are tools of white supremacy and nationalism. This is a tremendously destructive philosophy, and it's growing like wildfire.
Man, I would like to tell these people to just have a Coke and a smile and sit down and be quiet, but there seems to be
That's kinder than what I would like to tell them.
Yeah, kinda, right? I feel you. And but we know how that goes, so I won't suggest that one. But Bill, ever since I was a kid, I understood this. I mean, just back in elementary school, I remember, getting teased because of my vocabulary. I spoke a certain way. And because I spoke a certain way, I was trying to be white. And, even as far back as elementary school, and it clicked, like, look, are you telling me that because I sound smart, if you will, I'm trying to be white? So does that mean in order for me to qualify as being black, I got to sound stupid? That's an insult to your own race, not just insulting to me. It happened, with the music that I listen to. I like to listen to different kinds of music. But despite all this talk about we should be free and all that sort of stuff, and it's like, well, we are free, but they still complaining about being free. You're not going to let me be free to listen to whatever kind of music I want to listen to. And if I listen to music outside of this box, I'm trying to be white, right? And then, of course, it came along where I started identifying with more conservative ideas, I identified with being a Republican. Oh, you're trying to be white. So I'm seeing a pattern here, right? And the thing is, the sad part of it, Bill, to wrap up the irony of this, is that those who are saying this are repeating the very things that were beaten into them by Democrats. No, you can't read. You're not allowed to read. That's for white people. Are you trying to be white? Boy, you need to get your behind back in them cotton fields. Reading is for white folks. Being educated is for white folks. All these things, right? And it's like, so now you have black people repeating the same things that Democrats condition them to believe. And people like me get called sellouts because I'm like, no, none of that stuff is true. You have fallen for a lie.
This dynamic is actually... it's actually a race dynamic that is grafted onto a deeper dynamic. Mm. And the deeper dynamic is the dynamic of just the general plain orneriness and envy and meanness of lazy people. Mm-hmm. So let's just imagine an all-white classroom, because when I was growing up in Bermuda, it wasn't all-white, but it was considerably less racially mixed than it is here. Mm. Let's just say, for the sake of the example, that you've got an all-white class of 30 people. In that class, if you do well, you're going to find the whitest people on the planet saying to you, "Man, why do you always have your hands up? Why do you always have an answer? Mm. You're trying to make us look bad." You know, every time you come up with the right answer, every time you're eager to show that you actually learned this stuff, you're making us look bad. Mm-hmm. You're making us look bad, and you better stop it. And this is the dynamic of people who either don't want to do the work or can't. And I'd be willing to bet you that 95, 99% of those people are people that don't want to rather than who can't. Mm. It's the lazy's attitude towards the industrious. It's the anger that people feel when other people are outperforming them. Mm-hmm. And when you get right down to it, this has got nothing at all to do with race. It's all got to do with insecurity and a fundamental laziness and a fundamental envy that often comes with laziness.
Yes.
And this doesn't belong to any race or anything. This dynamic goes as deep as humanity does.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a genuine gripe, you know, just like you mentioned in the previous video, you know, with Tuskegee Airmen facing real racism. There was a time, I don't think anybody be a fool to deny that, yes, there was a time when there was some serious racism. We're not facing that now. Does it still exist? Yes, it does, in another form. But that kind of just overt, you know, rather than this condescending racism that we have today, but that overt just bigotry that was institutionalized, that was something different. And we have respect for blacks who overcame that. You know, it's like, you got over this. It's like, yeah, you deserve to be celebrated. This fabricated racism to identify with some sort of struggle or make some sort of struggle to make yourself look woke or validate yourself, that's it's fake, man. It's fake news. And you're right, man, in trying to, it could be anybody. It doesn't matter. You could have a classroom full of white people, and those with brown hair instead of those with blonde hair are going to say, "Hey, person with the blonde hair, why are you getting special treatment? Why this? Why that?" Or, you know, and they're going to look for anything to justify why this person is doing so much better. And then before you know it, they're making laws to make it look like, you know, "Hey, well, we're going to make sure that you don't get these special privileges and all that sort of stuff." It's like this stuff never ends. You know, so, but you're right, man. It's when somebody sees somebody outperforming, they'll look for some sort of excuse of why they're doing better and you're not. And a lot of it does come down to envy, and a lot of it does come down to jealousy. What's the other word I'm looking for? Laziness. You know, a lot of it comes down to that. So yeah, I agree.
And the laziness is not just often just sit around laziness so much as I'd rather do something else kind of laziness. Mm. For example, one of the terms that we use all the time, and I just think it's a bad term, is to say, well, this person is less fortunate or more fortunate. When people talk about, it's not fair that doctors make hundreds of thousands of dollars and 7-Eleven clerks make $7-$8 an hour. That's just not fair. Mm. You can use the economic argument of saying, well, he's worth a lot more than the 7-Eleven clerk is, because the brain surgeon can be a clerk at 7-Eleven, but the 7-Eleven clerk can't be a brain surgeon. And it is the uniqueness of his skill that commands the high price. And you can go down that whole road with people. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't work, because that's an appeal to reason and logic. This whole thing is about dealing with emotion and feelings. Mm-hmm. And the way I deal with that argument is to say, so you're telling me that a person who basically gave up their entire youth, right, who every single day at the end of classroom went home and studied for 4 or 5 hours, who would stay up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning learning what they needed to learn. Their friends are saying, "Hey, man, we're going to go to a party over at Jake's. You coming?" "No, man, I've got an anatomy test in the morning." Somebody who has made those kind of sacrifices that no one ever sees. No one ever sees mm-hmm. that. And I say to people, so you're telling me that a guy who's given up 15, 20 years of his life, or a woman who's done that in order to become a doctor, that it's somehow just that this person gets the same reward as a person who does nothing but play computer games, sleep on the couch till 3, you know, go out, smoke some dope, and then party all night? You're telling me that both of these people deserve the same reward? Whenever you talk about the problem of income inequality, I always want to go to, well, what about output inequality? Mm-hmm. But But this aspect of success is never shown. And it used to be in the pop culture. We've talked about the influence of movies and all this stuff all the time. Nowadays, we say, well, this guy's fortunate. And take the money out of it completely. You've got one guy in the room who's really bright, he's got his hand up all the time, and other people say, oh, you know, this guy, well, it's not like the fortune fairy flew low over the land and said, oh, I like the look of that person. I like their skin color. I think I'll go in and tap them and ding, and you can be fortunate as well. Mm. No one sees the work that's required to this. And the reason I bring all this up is because on some level, everybody knows that if you're going to be a brain surgeon or an engineer or something like that, you have to work your ass off. Mm. And not a lot of people want to do that. And I'm one of those people. I was a theater major. And the reason I was a theater major was because it was easier than being an engineering major. And that's just the bottom line.
Indeed, man. And don't make all the excuses. You know, this person had the opportunity to do it. It's like, well, you had the opportunity too, but you were playing in video games, right? And things like that. And not to come down on video gamers or anything like that, but there are people who like to take their time doing—
Slackers is the word I'm looking for.
Right, and that can come in many different forms. It's just more popular slacking time is playing in video games. And hey, to gamers, you know, I love video games. Well, you know, I haven't played video games in a long time. Mortal Kombat was my jam, man. And I stopped playing Mortal Kombat like years ago. But, My toys are behind me, not a joystick. My toys are behind me. But, but there are people who maybe they're just not wired to do certain things. And because they're not wired to do certain things, they're not getting the job with the big bucks and all that sort of stuff. It's like, I get that. But it's not fair. It's a prejudice in itself. If you're going to be prejudiced against this person who's got this occupation that they really worked for, and you're going to say that it's not fair and that they should be making the same thing that you make, or you should be making the same thing that they make, that's a form of bigotry itself. That's a form of prejudice in itself. This entitlement mentality that people have. And we're seeing a lot of that, Bill. It's like these people are going to be targeted and oppressed to a point where, heck, man, nobody's going to be able to get ahead because we're putting all these things on these people to bring them down in the name of white supremacy, in the name of sexism, it's all these things that people are going to do to cheat themselves. And then they'll wonder why. Why can't I get ahead? You know, it's like, because you keep killing the goose that lays the golden eggs that gets you to this place. So, you know.
That's right. And as that rot spreads wider and wider throughout society, it's almost like the standards come down. Mm-hmm. And now it's not like, oh, you're smart, you're acting white. Now it's, you're smart, you're acting Asian. Now you hear white people saying, white students saying, oh yeah, you got the answer right in math. Well, of course you did. You're an Asian. Mm-hmm. So it is unbelievably destructive. It is so, to me, it is so self-evidently destructive to actually say, as if you're a champion of an oppressed group, to say, no, you shouldn't have to get a right answer. Because to me, what that's saying is you can't get a right answer. Mm. And that is as racist as things get. And this is all coming from the left. And I wonder, why are they doing this? Why? If they really believe what they were saying, then this would be the farthest thing from their mind. If they really believe this, they would be saying, no, of course, people of color can not only do as well as whites, can beat them in every area in terms of academics. So why are they doing it? And I realized that these progressives are just bad people, and they're bad people with bad ideas, and nobody wants those ideas. And they are out of power and out of money and out of influence on the outside of those things. And in order for them to move into those things, it's going to take a lot of steam pressure, a lot of steam pressure to move that piston and put them in the middle where they want to be. And if you're going to have that kind of steam pressure, you got to have a boiler that is so hot all the time. You've got to have this grievance furnace burning at full temperature. Mm. In order for all of this stuff to happen. And that's what this is about. This is about destroying people's ability to, forget about compete. It's destroying people's ability to get an education by telling them that the act of getting an education is the tool of your own oppression. And people like Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, for whom an education was the holy grail of freedom, to say they're rolling in their graves is an understatement. Mm. They must be absolutely weeping, sobbing at what this has become.
Sure, man. Definitely. And you know, the sad part of it is also another sad thing with, as far as white supremacy goes, there is nobody more invested in this idea of white supremacy than the black community.
That's right.
You know, it's an unfortunate thing. It's like you complain about it, but you're highly invested in it. It translates into money and votes. So, you know, you do have the actual white elite, who are playing off of this thing. And they're making bank on it. I mean, to give people an example of what white supremacy looks like, when you have all these SJW engineers, these white engineers of it, who are basically telling people that they need to be more woke and they need to be less white and all that sort of stuff. And we need to put an end to white supremacy and all that sort of stuff. It's the condescension of it. The insult of it is that that's basically it. What you're telling me is that you're agreeing that you are superior because you're white. Right? You're basically admitting it. And the only way that it can stop is if we forfeit our white supremacy, because it's not.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. The whole thing is a giant ego stroke for white liberals.
Yes.
Yes, of course we're superior and we should give up these natural advantages. And because we're good people, we're going to be down with the struggle. We're not going to actually give up our advantages. Of course, that wouldn't be very smart.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so it's exactly what it is. It's just a gigantic ego stroke for these people.
Yes.
Oh, somebody's going to have to rescue. Oh, these poor minorities are not capable of dealing with, and somebody said something that hurt somebody's feelings. Mm. We are going to have to put a stop to this.
Right.
As if these are not individual human beings who can deal with their own problems and everybody gets called a name, and I'm not, you know, all of it. It's so unbelievably self-centered. You got it right on the money.
It doesn't.
Right on the money.
Thank you, man. And it doesn't stop. This has always been their objective. You know, when I look at the history of the Confederacy, represented by the Democrat Party, and one of the variations of their flag, you know, the Confederate battle flag, was a flag that was put inside of a white field, right? And it was created by, I think his name was William Thomas. And the inspiration for that flag is the white represents the heaven ordained supremacy over the black man, over the Negro. Right. That was one of the renditions of the Confederate flag. They changed it because it looked too much like a flag of surrender. Right. Mm-hmm. So the objective of the Democrat Party hasn't changed. They went to war against the U.S. Constitution under the allegiance of the Constitution of the Confederate States. And in that Constitution of Confederate States, it puts in clear language what the U.S. Constitution does not have. It basically makes the provision to enslave the Negro. Right. And because we want to be free to do this, we're going to have to do away with that U.S. Constitution because we feel entitled to whatever we want. This is a democracy and we want to be able to vote, to be able to outvote the supreme law of the land, that all these rights are God given. We want to be able to have the power to vote against that. That has not changed. The Democrats are still the same today and they're doing it centered around us. And they make these so-called woke arguments and they love it, man. They love it when blacks have this idea that, oh, you're just trying to be smart because you're trying to be white. This causes further division. That's absolutely what they want. It hasn't stopped. They want to tear down this republic and reform it in their democratic image. And it's centers, they need us for that.
When I was doing a segment on Booker T. Washington for Daily Wire, I really read everything, practically everything he wrote. I read an awful lot about the debates between him and W.E.B. Du Bois and so on. And what Washington said in not quite in so many words, but repeatedly was that if white liberals couldn't feel superior to blacks, then they could feel sorry for them. Mm. And that is another way of showing their superiority.
Yes.
Right? It's no longer, I can no longer command you, but now I will feel sorry for you and don't worry, I'll take care of this for you. And he said this is why everything that he did with Tuskegee was about coming to the table as an equal, coming to the table as an equal. This is why he was so vilified. He basically said, look, we couldn't have, there were no bricks to be made in anywhere in Alabama. There were no, we couldn't build a school because there were no bricks in Tuskegee. So we started building bricks and we failed three times, got it right on the fourth time because I pawned my watch to buy a fourth kiln and I never got the watch back. But now we make 700,000 bricks a year and they're the best bricks in Alabama, might be the best bricks in the United States. And white racists come to my school to buy my bricks so they can build their houses. And he said, and that changes a lot of minds. And that attitude is exactly the exact polar opposite of the, well, Booker T. Washington, just he's just acting white, right? He not only is he going to make bricks instead of just complaining about no bricks, he's got this lunatic, wacky idea that if he's going to make bricks, might as well make the best bricks in the world. Mm-hmm. Let's find out how to do that. And then that brick, which you could hold in your hand, it's undeniable. What Booker T. Washington was saying is, I have white racists, white supremacists coming to me to buy bricks that they build in their house. And every single night when they go to sleep looking at bricks that were made by black people in their houses. And I thought the genius of this man is beyond measure. And everything that he taught is now being inverted. And it is the most pernicious, degrading, dangerous idea that the progressives have floated. And that's really saying something.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And it's a sad thing where you can have the Democrats, they make sure that they get to them early, where you should be able to see that example right there in real time. The answer to that is, well, he's their kind of black person, right? He's just being the kind of black person that they want them to be. He says all the things that these white people want them to say. And it's like, no, man, I don't understand. You know, I do, but just as a rhetorical statement, it's like, I don't get how you can make being industrious a white thing. If you're going to do that, then you're just like I said earlier, you're more invested in white supremacy than anybody else. If you're going to say and being industrious is a white thing, to be a person who's able to manage their resources as a white thing, to be educated as a white thing, you're attributing all these things to him. And or if you're polite and if you're good, oh man, look at all that polite language that you're using. You're polite and you're well-spoken, or it's like you're trying to be white. Meanwhile, it's like, it doesn't add up, because you're saying that to do these good things is being white. But at the same time, you're always saying that white people are evil. So it's like, which one is it? It's like, white people are so evil, but you're acting all good and stuff because you're trying to be white. Huh?
Just to wrap up on this amazing man, you know, Booker T. Washington got catapulted to national celebrity when he gave a speech at, I think it was like a Georgia State Fair or maybe, no, it was like a Southern States Exposition. That's what it was. And he had petitioned the Southern States Exposition to have a black pavilion that would be built by black people. And he said it was just as nice as any of the other pavilions there. But he gave a speech to, and the speech was remarkable mostly because of the audience, because in this one room when he spoke, he said, I was surrounded by the richest, most aristocratic white people in the South, the most powerful politically and the richest, and also around the perimeter were the poorest black people in the South. And everybody was in the same room. And he said, cast down your bucket where you are. In other words, what he was saying, and he said in a nutshell, he pretty much verbatim said, there are 3 million blacks in the South at the time, former slaves. And he said, we can either be an anchor to drag you down, or we can be an asset to pull you up. We that's the choice. We can either be productive members of society who are an asset, or not. We can be a drag on society. And when he was finished talking, these rich white racists rose to their feet and rang the halls with applause. Newspaper editors ran out of that speech and got on the telegraphs and started telegraphing their offices back in Chicago and New York, saying, you will not believe what we just heard. We just heard a way out. You know, we heard a way out. We heard a way forward by this remarkable man who is simply saying, we are capable of doing anything else that anybody else does, and we're going to do it, and we're going to show you, mm-hmm. and we would like to be accepted as equals when we come to the table as equals. And the black people were ecstatic. The white people were crying. Mm. This is historical fact, not making this mm-hmm. up. And that attitude is so powerful that if we'd listened to this man, we all of our problems would have been over a long time ago, and racism would have been the first one to leave.
I can dig it, man. Yeah, it's one of those things that that people don't get to know about hardly anymore. And,
No, he's vilified as a sellout. He's just an Uncle
That's
Tom.
That's right.
Because he didn't demand things from the whites in Georgia. He didn't demand it and said, "Give me this, or else we're going to break things." He basically said, "No, we're gonna work, and we're gonna come." Well, basically, he said, "We're going to." He said verbatim, practically, he said, "We have a population of people who a year ago were slaves, or 10 years ago were slaves. They don't have engineering degrees. They don't know how to do anything except for pick cotton." And what Booker T. Washington said was, "We may have to go back. In fact, we're not may. We're going to have to go back and pick cotton because that's all we know how to do. We're going to have to go back and work for pay in some cases on the very plantations where we were slaves." He said, "We're going to have to go back and we're going to have to be farmers so that our sons can be mechanics and our grandsons can be doctors." And that attitude of looking forward and improvement instead of looking backward at grievances that you get further and further away from every year is a course that we didn't take. And it's the greatest tragedy in this country, with the exception of slavery.
And the sad part about it also, Bill, is that these things are remembered. They're remembered in ways that are meant to, you know, destroy the republic, destroy the culture. It's just like you said, we can do great things if you just give us a chance, support us or stand out of our way and whichever. And these plights that were heaped on the black community are now being used to, just like I said, a lot of this stuff centers around us, whether it comes to illegal immigration, whether it comes to gender orientation, the policies that are domestic economic policies that come down, we're used for that. So, you know, it's disgusting when I hear white liberals trying to use plights like Jim Crow laws, for illegal immigration. Well, they're just subjecting them to the same Jim Crow laws. Like, no, this is not the same thing. So the things that you're talking about, Bill, they're remembered, but they're used for perversion, and somehow we have to be able to get to them first, because the liberals, they're in everything, and they're in there to make sure that they pervert these stories.
Get to them first, and that's why the answer is, if we're talking about the future, the answer is in entertainment and not in this kind of stuff, no matter how much we may want to think so. I really do wonder what the reaction would be in schools all around this country now, first year college or high school, if I were to just walk in there and make the factual statement that Democrats who formed the Ku Klux Klan had murdered so many black Republicans after the Civil War in order to intimidate them from not voting, that there's a very real chance that they might have been exterminated had it not been for the National Rifle Association, which was created to arm black American citizens to protect them from the Democrats and the white hoods.
Man, exactly. Mind blowing. It's like you wouldn't even need to pull out the video camera the video player to show
them
that.
Some plexiglass in front of the lens, you know, and bring something to wipe the lens off.
Right. To be able to tell them that. And then, of course, it's going to have to be followed up. It's always going to have to be retaught, because these Democrats, whether it's the education system or whether it's movies, they've got stockpiles. They're ready all the time, pumping this stuff out, and we're just not as fortified to be able to do that. And we're looking at a culture that is totally given over to imagination constantly. There, it's reason, you know, we're, like I said, we're talking reason. But you know, if people are able, one-on-one, you know, if you're able to talk to these people one-on-one, you have a conversation, I've noticed that, hey, they're more receptive, right? They're willing to listen. But if it's in a group, it's going to be one of those things that the group is going to have to find cool enough to be able to say, yeah, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. And now that you've got their you've captured their imagination, now you can convey the truth to them. You can take these things by Booker T. Washington and help solidify them on a sentimental level. That's what a lot of people.
The emotional level.
On emotional, sentimental, sensationalized point, not just the reason. Because unfortunately, it, you know, even though truth never dies, it can get buried, right? Buried deep and under a lot of imagination. But, you know, if you it has to be constant. You have to have the stamina for it. And liberals got a lot of stamina to push imagination.
Yeah, they sure do. They sure do. But that's really what it comes down to, using entertainment and stories. Everything we learn is from stories. The Bible's a collection of stories. Mm-hmm. Using entertainment and stories and basically saying to people, you can believe this and feel bad, or you can believe this and feel good.
Yeah.
And good things or bad things will come out of that choice you make. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, this show is made possible by the members at BillWhittle.com who pay monthly membership fee for it to go out free to everybody, and especially to the new members for this show who joined us just a couple months ago. So we're very grateful. It's always a pleasure. It's a high point of my week. I was almost in my life, but I'm not quite that lonely as I may look.
Oh, come on.
But it's certainly the high point of my week to be able to sit here with my friend and talk about these issues, and certainly the response that we've been getting is great. So if you want to keep programs like this coming, you can go over to BillWhittle.com and become a member and be a citizen producer or make a one-time donation if you want. Until next week, we will see you right here with my friend Alfonso Rachel. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is The Virtue Signal.